Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we'll be reading from chapter 7, page 142, 7 and 8. So we're reading quite a bit this morning. And then Krishna Sharana Prabhu will make some comments on the Gopi Vastrahana Leela, yeah. The sealing of the clothes of the gopis by Lord Krishna. Vastrahara Leela, yeah. Vastrahara. So, chapter 7. By the way, before we, I did want to mention, this chapter at the end has a lot of analogies, and it is very poetic, and they go very quickly. So if you don't catch any of the analogies, in this chapter, be sure to make a note, and then we can go back and cover them, just in case. Okay? Okay, so chapter 7, autumn, summer in Vrindavan. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, their friends and families returned to village life and day-to-day activities. The summer season came on them with blazing sun and all that made it much less popular than winter, spring, or fall. But Krishna's very presence made the summer seem like spring. It seemed Vrindavan's residents were free of suffering. The pleasant sound of waterfalls was able to usurp the constant background noise produced by crickets as they chirped. The droplets from these waterfalls bathed trees then that lined their pools and moistened the refreshing breeze that kept Vrindavan cool. The rivers drenched their muddy banks and nourished fields of grass, preventing toxic summer sun from turning them to ash. Vrindavan is the nicest place that you'll find anywhere. As dancing peacocks spread their tails, their catcalls filled the air. The bumblebee's cacophony refreshes night and noon, while cuckoos thrive and sing in five varieties of tunes. With such a pleasant setting to perform their childhood play, the boys would daily take the cows and calves to drink and graze. With flower garlands, feathers, and red clay, this boisterous gang enjoyed their forest pastimes as they wrestled, danced, and sang. Sometimes the boys would dance as Krishna showered them with praise, accompanying them with music many different ways. They then enhanced Lord Krishna's dance with cymbals, flutes, and cries. These boys, in fact, were gods intact in cowherd boy disguise. They leapt and whirled and slapped and hurled and tugged each other's hair, played tag with one another, and threw fruits high in the air. They'd put on blindfolds, sing like birds, or dress themselves as kings. They'd jump like toads, make endless jokes, and fly on homemade swings. Pralamba. Although they played these common games while roaming through the woods, one day Lord Krishna saw something that only Krishna could. One boy stayed home with chores that day, but right there in his place, a demon named Pralamba had assumed his shape and face. Pralamba planned to kidnap Balaram and Krishna too. Aware of this, Lord Krishna played while planning what to do. He gathered all the boys for games, divided them in teams, and set some rules. The demon, fooled, did not know Krishna's scheme. Lord Krishna made a game in which the losers had to pay by holding winners on their backs and walking round that way. Pralamba was on Krishna's team, which lost and carried boys, and Balaram became Pralamba's passenger of choice. Afraid of Krishna's potency, the demon chose to go away from where the others played, with Balaram in tow. While looking for a quiet place to make a cruel attack, Pralamba felt the boy become a mountain on his back. Pralamba felt so burdened that he could no more maintain his cover as a cowherd boy amidst the crushing pain. His childish features vanished, and the form that he resumed was like a giant storm cloud. Balaram looked like the moon. The giant demon scowled as he rose up in the sky and showed his fearsome teeth and eyes to Balaram's surprise. Upset at being kidnapped by a demon such as this, Lord Balaram grew furious and struck him with his fist. With one blow from Lord Balaram, Prolumba's skull was cracked. Then, vomiting a gush of blood, the demon's form grew slack. Prolumba crashed upon the ground, producing such a jolt he seemed to be a mountain crushed by Indra's thunderbolt. The cowherd boys, astonished by Prolumba's ghastly form and by the great heroic deed that Balaram performed, cried, "Sadhu! Sadhu!" praising him till they ran out of breath, and lovingly embraced him as if he were back from death. In heaven, all the gods had been observing in suspense the violence of Prolumba and Lord Balaram's defense. They felt so pleased with Balaram to see Prolumba dead, they tossed celestial flower garlands round his lovely head. The Forest Fire. One day the boys were playing when the cows all strolled away to join some goats and buffalo in search of fields to graze. A great inferno suddenly appeared among the beasts. In fear they cried out helplessly amid the flames and heat. Soon Krishna, Balaram, and all the boys saw their neglect. At once, in great anxiety, they started to inspect the forest paths for prints of calves and other signs displayed that cows would raise if they had grazed on grass along the way. As Krishna called the cows by name, and each one understood, at last the boys tracked down the cows and steered them from the woods. Then, all at once, the forest fire, driven by the wind, surrounded and impounded them. It seemed to have no end. The blazes shot out fearsome sparks and licked with tongues of flame the many plants and animals who lived in its domain. The frightened cows and cowherd boys could only stand and stare. The boys then turned to Balaram and Krishna and declared, "O Krishna, Krishna Mighty One! O Balaram most brave! Should not this deadly blaze be stopped and your devotees saved? Our lords, you both know everything throughout the universe, so you must also know your friends will burn if this gets worse." On hearing the alarming statements his companions made, Lord Krishna said, "Just close your eyes and do not be afraid." As soon as all the boys had done what Krishna had desired, their dear companion opened wide and swallowed up the fire. And when the boys at last began to open up their eyes, they found themselves in safe surroundings, much to their surprise. The cows were safely with them, too. The boys, both pleased and awed, then lovingly decided their friend Krishna was a god. As they returned to Vraja, all the cowherd boys recalled the wondrous deeds of Krishna to the joy of one and all. As Krishna played a special flute, the cowherd girls looked on, relieved of blazing sorrow that had burned while he was gone. Their parents heard the boys explain how Krishna stopped the flames and Balaram destroyed Prolumba when he spoiled their games. The elder cowherd men and ladies, stunned to hear of this, as well concluded these two boys were gods born in their midst. Description of Autumn. At that time summer yielded to seasonal monsoons, when thunderclouds and lightning fill the sky each afternoon. The natural effulgence of the sky becomes obscured, as spirit souls are covered up by matter in this world. For months the sun had drunk earth's moisture, just as kings exact the money of their citizens through tariff, tolls, and tax. And as a good king places funds wherever needs arise, the moisture came again to earth from storm clouds in the skies. Ablaze with lightning, windswept clouds gave back their stored-up rain, as saintly persons give their lives to lessen others' pain. The earth, so lean and parched from drought, at once became revived, as yogis use the fruits of their tapas to energize. The nighttime autumn skies have clouds, obscuring stars and moon, but glowworms wriggling in the trees shine brightly through the gloom. In just that way, the age of Kali covers truthful saints, but speculators rise to fame by trickery and feint. When thunder sounds, the frogs, who had been silent, croak and squeak, as student Brahmins work in silence till they're told to speak. The streams fill up with heavy rains and flood themselves off course, as men who lose their sense control will sin again by force. With fields of green, red ladybugs, and mushrooms brilliant white, the earth seems like a poor man turning rich to his delight. The rain makes wheat fields brim, and farmers shout in ecstasy, though men too proud to farm and blind to God do not agree. The dried-up creatures feel their bodies active, fresh, and pleased, as atheists smile brightly when becoming devotees. The swollen rivers agitate the oceans where they meet, like Maya bothers yogis whose restraint is incomplete. As devotees with minds absorbed in Krishna stay at peace, the mountains are unmoved by rain clouds battering their peaks. The rain, however, floods the roads and makes them hard to find, as scriptures, long neglected, can be lost in course of time. The rain clouds overhead befriend the earth and give her life, but fickle lightning runs around like someone's unchaste wife. A rainbow comes, unique indeed, a bow without a string, as Krishna lives within this world, not tied to anything. A common soul is covered, though alive with inner light, as moonbeams lighten clouds that keep the moon removed from sight. And when the clouds appear, the peacocks call in ecstasy, as householders, distressed, are pleased to greet a devotee. The brittle trees drink rainwater and thus return to health, as yogis mend their bodies when good karma brings them wealth. The cranes stayed by the lakeside, though the storms made it a mess, as foolish men remain at home, enduring much distress. The rains brought floods that devastated irrigation dikes, as speculators break down Vedic laws that they dislike. The winds impel the clouds to let their pent-up moisture fall, as priests instruct the king to shower charity on all. And when the forest grew resplendent, fit to be enjoyed, Lord Krishna came with Balaram, the cows and cowherd boys. When it would rain, they ran to caves and ate bulbs where they grew. And when it cleared, they ran outside and ate their lunches, too. The grass-stuffed cows, with bulging udders, gait grown very slow, would jump and run to Krishna, causing milk to overflow. Content and tired, they lay down to chew their cuds and rest, as Krishna watched his own creation full of happiness. The rainy season yielded, and autumn time appeared, with gentle winds and cloudless skies and water crystal clear. The season brought out lotuses and left the lakes refined, as bhakti yoga purifies the fallen yogi's mind. The autumn cleared the sky of clouds, as students are enhanced when they progress from basic skills to something more advanced. Confined by rainstorms, animals were freed at last to roam, like householders renouncing their confinement to their homes. Retired in their later years, such householders become enlightened, just as autumn ends the rainy season scum. The autumn makes the muddied ponds and streams as purified as wise, mature renunciates whose minds are sanctified. Such persons who have given up material delights are delicate as rain-spent autumn clouds of downy white. These saintly persons speak for days or may not speak at all, as mountain springs may gush away or stop throughout the fall. Receding waters strand some fish on banks of streams and lakes. Some fools can't see their lives recede and make the same mistake. Investing all their energy in family affairs, they fail to waken love of God and die in great despair. As autumn sunshine scorches fish who swim in shallow streams, the pain of family life bears down on happy household dreams. As muddy lands dry up and plants grow rich and full in fall, a sober person goes beyond attachment to it all. With autumn, all the seas and lakes grow peaceful, calm, and still, as sages overcome temptation through their strength of will. Such sages keep their senses in a state of full withdrawal, as farmers keep the water on their crops with earthen walls. The autumn moon relieves the summer heat, restoring health, as wisdom uplifts fools who take the body as the self. When clouds depart, the stars grow brightly through the atmosphere, as if, for them, the meaning of the Vedas has grown clear. Vrindavan's moon, surrounded by the stars, grows round and pleased, like Krishna in Vrindavan with his loving family. A fragrant, pleasant breeze blows in, and troubles soon depart, for all except the gopis, who are struck with broken hearts. The women, cows, and female birds grow fertile, drawing mates, just as, when one serves Krishna, piety accumulates. The rising sun thrills lotuses, save those that bloom at night, as kings can frighten thieves while bringing honest men delight. The earth, adorned with Krishna's feet, confers abundant crops. The grains grow ripe for harvesting and soon begin to drop. The citizens hold festivals and honor these first grains by cooking them in sacrifice and tasting the remains. When rainy season ends and autumn breezes fill the air, the priests go out and travel, merchants leave to sell their wares, and leaders walk about to manage, study, and take tolls, as death frees yogis to pursue their own respective goals. Chapter 8, The Gopis. Krishna's flute. Returning to the forest, Krishna noticed the perfume that wafted from the crystal lakes where lotus flowers bloomed. His friends and cows nearby, the Lord heard bees and birds in song, which prompted him to grasp his flute and start to play along. The lovely sound of Krishna's flute brought Cupid into play within the hearts of all the gopis hearing it that day. They wished to speak of Krishna, who was beautiful and young, but Cupid overwhelmed their minds and quieted their tongues. They thought of Krishna's dhoti, like a sunshine's golden rays, and how his dancing feet blessed earth as friends sang out his praise. They thought of Krishna's peacock feather-ornamented head, and then they heard his flute again. They all embraced and said, "My friends, what sight could be more sweet for the eye's perception than Krishna with his brother leading this nice procession of cows and boys into the forest in autumn season, with flute in hand and loving glances on those who please him? As Balaram wears blue and Krishna wears silks of yellow, adorned with lotuses and leaves, they sing a cappella and shine in splendor as they dance through Vrindavan forest. Like actors dance across a stage, they appear before us. What pious deeds has Krishna's flute done to gain his kissing, the very nectar meant for us and which we are missing? The bamboo, father of that flute, cries with tears of pleasure. Its mother, Yamuna, feels joy that cannot be measured. The peacocks dance to Krishna's flute song with jubilation, while other birds stand still and watch them with admiration. Vrindavan makes the planet Earth known throughout creation, for Krishna's footprints touch her surface without cessation. When Krishna, dressed in gorgeous clothes, places flute so sweetly, reluctant deer creep up and drop all their fears completely. The bucks are happy as the does gather round to please him, yet our resentful husbands protest when we just see him. What woman can remain unmoved when she sees Govinda? In heaven, even wives of gods, so well off and splendid, while flying great celestial airplanes feel such attraction, the flowers fall out of their hair and their garments slacken. When Krishna plays his flute, the cows raise their ears and listen. The calves stop drinking milk and swoon as their eyelids glisten. The birds just roost in the trees with eyes shut and do not call out, for they are listening, hanging on, trying not to fall out. When rivers hear the flute, their current becomes abated. With swirling whirlpools, all their waters grow agitated. The waves embrace Lord Krishna's feet, holding on for hours, and bring to them a humble offering of lotus flowers. Observing Krishna lead the boys in the blazing sunlight, with cows to care for in the heat till the evening twilight, the friendly cloud assembles droplets of condensation to make a great umbrella shading the congregation. The aborigines who live in Vrindavan's precincts include young ladies like ourselves, full of lusty instincts. They satisfy themselves with dust from the one they covet, turned reddish by his lotus feet, touched by his beloveds. When Krishna leaves our village, Govardhan Hill provides him the water, grass, and fruits to nourish the cows beside him, and caves and vegetables that he and his friends require. Thus Govardhan is Krishna's servant, and none is higher. The sound of Krishna's flute is so very sweet and soothing, it stuns all creatures that can move, and they all stop moving, while trees, immobile, grow ecstatic and start to quiver. Such wondrous power Krishna's flute and its song deliver. The simple gopis talked about Lord Krishna's flute for hours, and though they lacked an education, affluence, or power, Lord Krishna was exclusively the hub of their desire, the standard of devotion to which all of us aspire. The gopis' clothing stolen. The Vedas call for, at end of fall, for special sacrifice, so unwed maidens eat a simple khichdi without spice. They praise Katyayani, a goddess, hoping to obtain a worthy husband to protect and keep them well maintained. The eager gopis hurry to the Jamuna to bathe and make an image of Katyayani from river clay. They worshipped her with sandalwood, fresh flowers, nuts, and fruits, as each spoke out this mantra to shed light on their pursuit. O dear Katyayani, my goddess, now that you're installed, I worship you as God's own power, reigning over all. Please make the son of Nanda marry me, and if you do, I will forever offer my obeisances to you. Each day they'd rise and hurry to the Jamuna at dawn to beg Katyayani for Krishna. Soon the month was gone. While singing Krishna's glories, they observed a final bath, undressing on the shoreline near the women-only path. Lord Krishna, who knows everything, could clearly understand that every single gopi prayed for him to take her hand. Since he fills every wish and gives whatever one requires, Lord Krishna crept up silently to fill their hearts' desires. The Lord snatched all the gopis' clothes and climbed a nearby tree, and laughing, held their garments high for all of them to see. He said, "Now, girls, to get your clothes, come here one by one. I'm serious. You must come now. Your sacrifice is done." The gopis, pleased with Krishna's joking, kept themselves immersed. They laughed in their embarrassment, but none would come out first. Their honor was protected. One could only see their heads, but soon the water made them chilly. Shivering, they said, "Dear Krishna, foremost son of Nanda, tease us if you will. We find your prank unjust and wrong, and now we're getting chilled. We are your humble maidservants. We'll do most anything. But first you must return our clothes, or we will tell the king." Said Krishna, "If you are my servants, every one of you must come and get her garments now. What can King Nanda do?" On hearing Krishna's statement so determined and so strong, the gopis saw they had no option but to go along. While shivering, they all stepped from the river to the land, while covering their private parts with forearms, wrists, and hands. Though such exposure crushes any girl who's pure and chaste, the gopis loved the Lord so much they suffered no disgrace. The Lord fulfilled the gopis' prayer to wed him with this guise, for chaste women are naked only for their husband's eyes. When Krishna saw the bashful love the cowherd maids had shown, he shouldered all their clothing, smiled, and said in loving tones, "By going naked in this sacred river as you bathed, you all offended Jamuna and Lord Varunadev. To counteract your sin and the reactions that you dread, you now must join your palms in prayer and touch them to your heads." Although the gopis weren't concerned that devas might protest, they deeply cared for Krishna, so they followed his request. The simple gopis trusted Krishna So implicitly, their mood of loving service was as deep as it could be. Accepting blame for taking bath with less than full attire, the gopis raised their hands in prayer as Krishna had required. They prayed to him to cleanse their sins and offered humble bows. Lord Krishna then returned their clothes, rewarding their strict vows. Although the Lord had cheated them and treated them like toys, the gopis were enchanted by their favorite cowherd boy. And even if he broke their hearts to satisfy a whim, the gopis always happily surrendered unto him. The gopis quickly sorted out their clothing and got dressed, and still they did not want to leave, for they were all obsessed. They glanced at Krishna shyly, standing still with covered heads. The Lord thought of their sacrifice and, smiling at them, said, O saintly girls, I understand your sacrifice was moved by nothing more than love for me. Please know that I approve. Your love for me leads not to lust, but makes you purified, as seeds won't sprout once they are cooked or left to dry outside. My dear pure-hearted gopis, now that you are nicely dressed, return to your own homes and put your troubled minds to rest. Your worship of Katyayani has gained for you the right to dance and have my company through coming moonlit nights. Reluctantly, the gopis left. They thought of nothing more than Krishna, for they loved him now more deeply than before. They hankered for those coming nights when, dancing in the woods, they'd serve the purpose of their vows, which Krishna understood. Krishna praises the trees. Some months after this incident, Lord Krishna and his mates took out the cows for grazing in a new and distant place. The sun was very fierce and hot, and when he saw the trees gave shade just like umbrellas, Krishna commented, quite pleased, O Angsu, Sridham, Ojasvi, Vrishabha and Vishal, Varutapa, Arjuna, Stoka Krishna and Subal, just see how all these trees endure the sunshine, rain and wind to shelter and protect all kinds of animals and men. These trees give of themselves so much, so others may survive. They seem to be like generous persons, leading saintly lives. If anybody asks a tree for something they require, they always leave in pleasure, having filled their heart's desire. These trees give us their fragrant flowers, foliage, and fruits, their wood for fuel, shade to cool, and ashes, sap, and shoots. They show how everyone should act to benefit mankind by giving of their resources, their statements, and their minds. While sharing these instructions, Krishna strolled amongst the trees until he reached the river with his band of devotees. The waters of the Jamuna, transparent, cool, and sweet, relieved the boys and cows alike from weariness and heat. The Brahmins' Wives. The cows went to a nearby field, but as they calmly grazed, the boys themselves were out of food, and soon their hunger raged. The boys, who thought of Krishna, whether happy or distressed, approached the Lord and Balaram, presenting this request. O mighty muscled Ram, O Krishna, evil's greatest foe, please tell us where to find some food. Our hunger burns us so. Though Krishna liked to see the cowherd boys eat well and thrive, as he replied, his thoughts applied to certain Brahmins' wives. Some nearby Brahmins wish to reach the planets of the gods. Just now they're holding sacrifice. Ask them for prasad. Say, Krishna and his brother have dispatched us all to you, for we need food, and they said you would know what we should do. The boys went as instructed and submitted their request. With folded hands they fell like sticks and prayed with great respect. O Brahmins, you are God's extensions walking in our midst. Our masters Balaram and Krishna sent us to ask this. The two of them are tending cows nearby and need some food. Would such a gift, O learned souls, befit your attitude? We know you're holding sacrifice and should not eat right now, but giving food to hungry boys can always be allowed. When all the Brahmins heard this plea from Krishna through the boys, they didn't look at them or speak or even make a noise. Preoccupied with complicated Vedic rites and prayers, they went on with their sacrifices, noses in the air. The elements of sacrifice, the mantras, gear, and fire, the gods, the place, the time, and the results that one desires, are simply Krishna's opulence. The Brahmins, though, ignored a personal inquiry from their proudly worshipped lord. The cowherd boys were disappointed. Slowly they returned to Balaram and Krishna to report they had been spurned. When Krishna heard what happened, he just laughed and laughed again. "A beggar often fails," he told the boys. "Forget these men. Now go and ask the wives of these same Brahmins for a meal, for they are pure devotees, and I know how they will feel." The boys walked past the Brahmins and went to their homes instead. Approaching all their chaste and well-dressed wives, they bowed and said, "Respected ladies, pardon us and kindly lend an ear. Lord Krishna and his brother are nearby. They sent us here to see if you would feed them. We are tending cows, you see, and all of us are famished. Have you food for us to eat?" Delighted by this question, all the Brahmins' wives agreed to bring to Balaram and Krishna anything they'd need. For Krishna, they filled pots with food to please the taste and touch, and ran like rivers to the sea, for they loved him so much. Their husbands, sons, and brothers saw the women. "Stop," they said. The wives loved Krishna more than them and ran on straight ahead. They found him near the Jamuna, amid a grove of trees, relaxing with his brother and his cowherd devotees. He wore a golden dhoti. His complexion, monsoon blue, was set off by a peacock feather full of brilliant hues. With garlands, lily ointments, and long hair hung round his face, he chatted with his friends and showed a dancer's form and grace. For months and years these ladies had been hearing Krishna's name, and now that they were seeing him, their hearts were set aflame. Embracing him within their hearts, they satisfied their needs, as yogis grasped the soul within to conquer lust and greed. Lord Krishna, who knows everyone and every secret thought, could see these ladies' other plans for life had come to naught. They set aside their family life to come to him that day. His face warm with affection, Krishna smiled and turned to say, "Your family's objected, but you've come here nonetheless. Please sit a while and speak to me. Do you have some request?" Those thoughtful souls whose needs and wants are clearly diagnosed approach me out of love, for that will benefit them most. Affection for one's spouse and children, home and property, can only come from contact with the soul and thus from me. You love me, but your husbands are the persons you should serve. Please help them hold their sacred rites all Brahmins must observe. The wives replied, "Almighty One, do not inflict such harsh words upon us. Reciprocate with your devotees as you have promised. We'll leave our husbands and remain with you in this forest and wear what garlands you may kick on the ground before us. Now we've surrendered unto you. Who else can protect us? Our husbands, fathers, sons, and brothers will all reject us. Chastiser of the wicked, Krishna, our destination, oh, please, we beg you, keep us, let us keep your association." Said Krishna, "Why should you stay here? You all have families, and no one will find fault with you for meeting here with me. But everyone would be displeased were you to simply stay. Remain at home and think of me and build your love that way. Affection for me does not come from mere proximity. It grows in one who hears and chants my pastimes constantly. While worshipping my deity, remember me alone, and you will love me more and more. Now go back to your homes." The Brahmins' wives obeyed the Lord. Returning to their men, they helped them with their sacrificial rituals again. When one wife who had not seen Krishna heard what had transpired, she grasped the Lord within her heart and instantly expired. Govinda, meanwhile, fed his friends the ladies' tasty food and then ate some himself in a triumphant, joyous mood. Appearing by his will in human bodily attire, the Lord fulfilled the gopis, cows, and cowherd boys' desires. The Brahmins, meanwhile, noted the devotion of their wives. They thought, "Now we have missed the greatest prospect of our lives. We could have shared our offerings with Krishna, but instead we went on with our rituals." In agony, they said, "To hell with our auspicious birth, our vows, and all we've learned. To hell with all our rituals and honors we have earned. Because we failed to please Lord Krishna, we are now condemned. Illusion has bewildered us supposed holy men." The flawless love for Krishna, shown by each and every wife, destroyed the fearsome bond to death that's known as family life. Our wives have never mastered Vedic rites as we have done, but they have oceans of ecstatic love, and we have none. Each part of Vedic sacrifice is Vishnu, Lord of all. He came to us as Krishna. How our pride has made us fall. Although we have been mesmerized by honor, pride, and fame, we now remember Krishna is the goal we must attain. He must have wanted to expose how arrogant we were, for otherwise what purpose would this incident have served? Since Krishna is the master of Sri Lakshmi, queen of wealth, why else would he send others to beg foodstuffs for himself? Oh, Krishna, we are foolish Brahmins. Pardon our offense. Your powers of illusion overwhelmed our common sense. We'd go to you at once, just as our wives did, but, you see, King Kongsa might find out, and he would surely be displeased. The Lord stayed with the Brahmins, since they had so many doubts about King Kongsa's anger, should they leave, and he find out. Krishna Sharanam.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Amritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Good morning, everyone. Very nice to see you, everyone. Since we don't have much time, so I just gonna go through what I prepared. It's so much we covered today, and of course, Each chapter, I think we cover maybe 5-6 chapters in Bhagavatam, and then it's a very rich in each and every chapter, so we can go on and on and on. But today I decided to focus on this Vastara Harana, the pastime of Krishna stealing away the clothes of gopis. So when we hear pastimes like this, for example, the title of this book is A God Who Dances, but then we may wonder, wow, is Krishna sort of God of sexual harassment or something like that? that is why we are supposed to study all the preceding cantos first, so that we ontologically understand or philosophically understand who Krishna is. Namely, that he is not one of us. Okay, and then that's the main source of misconception. Because you think that the Krishna is just one of us, just another boy, therefore when you hear that in Dwaraka he had, 108,000 or something? 16,000 wives, and then you go, man, that's like how many wives? or when you hear the Krishna, in a few days you're going to hear how Krishna is going to have Rasa Lila dance, right? And then Rasa Lila dance it's not just bunch of ladies, and it's not just a bunch of unmarried ladies, but it's also including married ladies. Okay, so Radhika is married. So it's like, how come so-called God that you worship, someone may say, is hanging out with the lady who has husband, right? I mean, the husband is someone other than Krishna, someone who is someone else than Krishna. So, because of this pastime in 10th canto is a very esoteric, and then also actually it's a very advanced level of spirituality, and because of inability to understand and appreciate properly, for example, when the the British missionaries went to India and occupy, if you remember, in British India, the Bengal was the Calcutta was the capital of the imperial British India, right? So they, when they discovered these stories about God, they were shocked, and then basically they sort of rejected this as nonsense, and some sort of British educated, sort of English educated Bengalis also sort of rejected this tradition of Krishna consciousness, which you can find in Bhagavatam. But then, of course, the Bhakti Vinoda, one of our acharya came, and then sort of he and also with together with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his son, restored what is the proper perspective. So what is proper perspective? First of all, philosophically speaking, the we are all feminine, right? The even though physically some of us are embodied in the male body, so-called male body, but then philosophically we are all the energies, shaktis of Krishna. So there is three energies, and then we are tatastha shakti, the so-called the sort of marginal or like in between the spiritual energy and external energy. But then so therefore we as a soul are the only female in relation to Krishna. And then there is this my favorite story of Mirabai. Do you know Mirabai, who that is? Who is she? Anyone? Any suggestion? She was the famous Vaishnava poet in 15th, 16th century. So she was a prince, Rajput prince. But she was so much in love with Krishna that she did not want to marry to human being, right? But because she was a princess, so she had to kind of follow the family duty. So even though she married, but even though she married to human person, she did not have any contact with her husband, and she was just so absorbed in Krishna. But then one time, in order to have sadhu sangha, the association with devotees, she went to Vrindavan, and she asked for the association with none other than our Jiva Goswami, right? So she asked to Jiva Goswami, could we meet and then have some sangha together? And then what did Jiva Goswami say? I don't meet women. Why? Because he was a sannyasi, right? Because I'm sannyasi, so I cannot see you. I'm sorry. But then Mirabai wrote, well, as far as I'm concerned, Krishna is the only male I see, and everyone else is just female. So what's the problem? So that's the wonderful story that the you can see that we are all female, and therefore we don't need to be envious about Krishna having many wives. And then also we can see, if you look at the Mahabharata, there is this Krishna fulfilling the desires. So basically, Krishna fulfilled the desires of devotees. And the reason why Gopi, his stealing of clothes is not sexual harassment is just ultimately because Krishna is just fulfilling Gopi's desire. And that point you can see when you see Mahabharata, for example, when the Draupadi was getting disrobed, right? Who was the person who supplied the clothes? It was Krishna, right? So the Yudhishthira lost the dice game, so he lost everything, and including his wife. So Dushyasana, the brother of Duryodhana, dragged her into the public space and then sort of humiliated her. And then he tried to disrobe, because even clothes were no longer her possession. So when he tried to disrobe her, of course, the Draupadi initially tried to protect herself, but then you know, the Dushasana is a strong, I mean, she's a Kshatriya, so she could not match, she could not protect by her own power. But then eventually she raised her hand and then said, "Oh, Govinda, please help me." Okay? So when she surrendered to Krishna, somehow Krishna mystically appeared and then he supplied the clothes. So, whereas in this pastime we read that Krishna is stealing Gopi's clothes, there you can see Krishna is supplying clothes. So you can see that Krishna is not doing these things out of his desire. He's just responding to the request and desire of devotees. He's just doing whatever he's doing in order to satisfy devotees. And that point of Krishna being nishkama, that you can see, for example, in the text called Gopala Tapani Upanishad, and that's one of the texts that the Goswami said it's important for our tradition. And then there is the story that the Krishna, after spending time with gopis at night, overnight, right? Gopis ask, "So we would like to feed some sage to do pious activity. So who should I feed? Who should we feed?" And then Krishna said, "Oh, feed Durvasa Muni." And then, but then Gopi again said, "Well, yeah, okay, so we are going to cook and feed Durvasa Muni. But then Durvasa Muni is on the other side of Yamuna, so we have to cross the Yamuna. How do we cross the Yamuna?" And then Krishna said, "Well, if you chant that Krishna is a brahmachari, you just chant Krishna is a brahmachari, then Yamuna will part and then you can cross." And then gopis laughed, "Well, you just spent night with us. How can you say you're brahmachari?" Like Krishna said, "Don't worry, just chant Krishna." Actually, the Sanskrit is nishkama, the desireless, without desire. So Krishna is without desire. So gopi went and then just chanted Krishna is nishkama, devoid of any selfish desire. And then sure enough, the Yamuna parted. So they went the other side and then fed the Durvasa Muni. And then when they were returning, they have to cross the river again. So they asked Durvasa Muni, "How should we go back? Now the river is again flowing, so how should we go back?" And the Durvasa Muni said, "Well, just chant Durvasa fasted." Fasted. He fasted. He did not eat. Okay? And then gopis laughed again. "What are you talking about? We just fed you and you just took." "Don't worry. Just go and chant Durvasa fasted." And then sure enough, the river parted and then they came back to the other side. And then they came back to Krishna and said, "Well, could you explain to us what's the meaning of Durvasa's fasting and then you being nishkama, you being brahmachari?" And then Krishna's explanation is that, well, even though he spent night with gopis, but there was no tinge of his selfish desire. He was there to satisfy gopis' desire. Why Durvasa fasted? Why? Because Durvasa did not eat out of his greed. And Durvasa ate, accepted the arm or this feast because gopi, they are the ones who wanted to feed sage. Okay, so the sage is just accepting. So by accepting, he was just fulfilling gopi's desire. And because he has done so without any of selfish desire, therefore he actually did not create any of karma of eating out of one's own desire. So that point is that philosophically, we are the feminine energy. But then also Krishna is nishkama, so therefore you cannot really say that when Krishna steals the gopi's clothes, he's committing sexual harassment. That's not the case. Okay, so that's the main point. So what do we learn from this? basically, Krishna fulfills the desire, whatever you desire. So, akama, sarva kama ba, moksha kama udaradi. So, whether you're with desire or without desire, that you pray to Krishna. Why? Because he fulfills the desires of everyone. So, in that way, the Krishna stole the clothes and then made them stand naked in front of Krishna. Why? Because Krishna, Krishna knew that gopis wanted to marry him, and then by making them naked in front of him, that's the sign of his acceptance. But the point, so Krishna fulfills everyone's desire, but the point is that he might not do so in the way we expect. Okay, so that's the challenge. And that's why you can see this feeding by Brahmins' wives. So whereas these male Brahmins are engaged in the fire sacrifice, which is the worship of Vishnu, right? But then when actually Vishnu came or Krishna came to beg food, they did not recognize, right? Whereas the Brahmins' wives, they could recognize instantly, so they could feed. So we may desire, when we chant Hare Krishna, we're asking Krishna to, please Krishna, engage me in your service. But when you ask for that, he will fulfill your desire, but then the way he fulfills may not be in the way that you expected, right? So, and then in that way, sometimes, like, you say, well, wait a minute, that was not the deal, right? But then Krishna said, well, that's what you asked for. So, if you could then, surrender to Krishna's lead. So Krishna leads our hand, but sometimes we hesitate. But somehow if we could surrender to his lead, and then we can dance. And we can dance joyfully. Okay? So, that's about what I wanted to say, in terms of Bhagavatam. And then, I just wanted to thank you, for your association, because I'll be leaving Wednesday early morning next week. So I'll be here for a few more days, but then, just I wanted to say goodbye, before I go mad because of my packing and all these things. So it has been a sheer pleasure to be a part of this Krishna house, even though because of my work, Lord, I couldn't contribute directly, but then I certainly personally benefited by attending programs and then being amongst you. And certainly when I was finishing my PhD, when I was doing PhD, I didn't have time to, teach. So, like a teaching, was something I really wanted to do. So Krishna fulfilled my desire. And then also when I was in Oxford, even though I was living with, other students, other student devotees, we didn't have very strong morning programs. So most of the time, I was the only one. We had the morning program 7:30 to 8:30. We sing 30 minutes and read Bhagavatam 30 minutes. But most of the time, I was doing by myself. And I was really asking for Krishna, please, could I have, you know, the situation where I can join the morning program and then do whatever I have to do. Krishna fulfilled my desire for teaching, and also Krishna fulfilled to join wonderful morning program. But then, of course, challenge was that then, you know, this teaching was like so demanding, and then I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I almost regretted. And then also morning program, you could see, I mean, last semester I couldn't come really so much because I was so overwhelmed with my work. I feel Krishna always fulfills desire in my life also, but then again, in a sort of unexpected way. But then, as soon as somehow I could surrender to make it to the point that then, okay, whatever happens, go to Mangalarati or die. So when I made that decision and it started coming, so since then it's been a very wonderful experience. So thank you very much for your association, and I wish you all the best with your devotional life, and yes, and please forgive me if I made any offense. So please accept my humble obeisances.